Hello and welcome to Pulsar Space Impulse's very own podcast on everything spacey. I'm Ria Urban, your host for today.
Our guest today is China space guy Blaine Curcio, who's a senior affiliate consultant for Euroconsult and also the founder of Orbital Gateway Consulting. And he also manages a newsletter, the China Space Monitor. Welcome, Blaine.
Well, thanks very much for having me, and nicely done on pronouncing my last name. I think you're one of the first people that I've spoken to in this type of environment to have gotten that right. So great to be here. Thanks.
Well, I cheated because I asked you before the interview, but thank you. Right. So could you just tell us how you ended up in the space industry? Were you always interested in it? And then just tell us how you ended up in China, because you have a very exciting life, I think.
Sure. Well, I guess those two are a little bit linked. I joke with people that despite my working in the space industry, I don't actually, I was not one of those kids that was looking up at the sky and wanting to be an astronaut or a rocket scientist. So when I was at uni, I was studying international business. And during that time, there was an international internship within my university. It was a US university, so international internship being non-US. It happened to be with SES, so the large satellite operator based in Luxembourg, in their office in the Netherlands. And so this was back in 2010. I got this internship, went and worked with SES for the summer, went back to uni, finished up my degree. And then about a year later, one of my former colleagues from that SES internship reached out, having joined a satellite communication, satellite consulting and research firm, and asked me to apply for a job within that firm. And so really kind of a roundabout way of going kind of the, I guess, international business route, and then happening to just come into the SATCOM and space industry. And then in terms of China, I mean, my international business undergrad, I had also done an exchange program as part of that at the University of Hong Kong. And so during that exchange, I got some level of familiarity with the region, built some contacts there. And so I moved back to China just a couple of years after finishing just after finishing uni, so a couple of years after my exchange program. And so yeah, basically just starting around the time that I was finishing uni, I just sort of happened into the space sector, and around that same time I kind of happened into Hong Kong as well, and by extension Greater China. And yeah, it's been now 13 years just about that I've been in Greater China. And also just about 13 years that I've been covering the space and the SATCOM sector. So it's nice to be able to say I'm kind of almost mid-career now. I remember being the youngest person at conferences quite a number of years ago. And so now to meet some of these younger people coming into the sector, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Right. Well, you're not that old. You're my age. So don't say that we're old.
No, but almost mid-career, though. It's not, that's a... But anyway, point taken.
Oh, no, I get it. Right. Okay. So what's special about China to you, aside from the space sector?
What is special to China? So just to be clear, you mean outside, purely outside of the space industry? What is special about China? Is that
yeah. To you, like what was intriguing about
the food definitely is unbelievable. I'm a big fan of different Chinese food, and in the US obviously we have sort of Americanized Chinese food, but in China you have, I think it's something like 8 different distinct regional variations of food, and then you have all these different dishes that have all this history and culture behind them, and so that's pretty damn cool. A couple of other interesting things about China that I really have appreciated over the years, I think the people in general are extremely welcoming and curious. I think it's a good country to just go and talk to, talk to people. And I've found, a lot of openness towards foreigners and even towards Americans. I mean, I'm from the US, and I was in Beijing 2 months ago, and walking around with my kind of slightly immature NASA backpack with an American flag on it. And I felt a little bit sheepish and, a little bit like, man, I really should get a new backpack. But point being, I was there for like a week, and at no point did anyone come up to me and you know, have any kind of negative anything. So I have to say that the people are pretty phenomenal. And then I guess the last thing, obviously, you know, the history is pretty damn cool. When I was in high school, I really wanted to be a history teacher, and you know, I have some Italian heritage, so I always liked reading about the ancient Romans and all of that. And so, yeah, to be able to go to a country that has, you know, maybe quite some thousand years of history is pretty cool.
Right. And what's your favorite place in China?
My favorite place in China. I really like Chongqing and Chengdu in the southwest. The food is, in my opinion, the best, but then also the Chongqing, the geography is really cool. It's a little bit like Hong Kong, a lot of mountains, a few rivers going through the city. And then Chengdu is this big flat plain, and you have, you know, 25 million people living in the city, and it's a pretty chill part of China. You know, I talk to a lot of young Chinese people who say when they get older they want to retire to that part of China because, you know, it's the cities are big and modern and cosmopolitan, but the pace of life is much, much slower than, say, Shanghai or Hong Kong or Beijing.
Right. Okay.
I mean, I would say yes. I mean, it's a very different language from English. I'm probably very lucky to have a pretty good memory with characters. And so when I see Chinese characters, if I see them a handful of times, I typically can remember them pretty well. And then I think, you know, when living in China, one thing that's really helpful when trying to learn a language is that Chinese people in general, obviously generalities, but in general, you know, Chinese people are very happy to help foreigners just practice their Chinese. There's a certain level of perhaps pride that Chinese people take in seeing foreigners trying to learn their language. And so, you know, it's like, if I can make the analogy of, you know, in the United States, if you're walking around a major city and you're trying to speak very broken English with people, you know, they might be friendly, but they're probably not going to stand there and speak broken English with you for 10 or 15 minutes just because they find this to be a novel experience. It's, you know, so I think from that perspective, it makes it a little bit easier to learn a language.
Right. Fair enough. Well, I don't think I could ever learn it. So kudos to you. All right. So when you arrived in Hong Kong, have you already had the job with Euroconsult, or did that come later on?
No, so that came quite a bit later on. So, well, I guess, yeah, it came rather later on. So I had joined Euroconsult at the, when was that? End of late 2018 did I join Euroconsult. So almost 5 years now. And that was really kind of a natural extension of what I had previously been doing. So I was previously doing, you know, satellite-related research and consulting with another firm quite similar to Euroconsult, so NSR. And when I left NSR, I started focusing more on the Chinese space sector rather than the SATCOM sector, which was my primary work with NSR. And, you know, when focusing on the Chinese space sector, especially back in 2018, there was not really a whole lot of there wasn't a lot of work to do. I mean, there was a lot to learn, but in terms of projects, in terms of actual stuff that would keep me really busy, there wasn't that much. And so to be able to work with a firm like Euroconsult, which has been a really, you know, just phenomenal firm to work with, to work with them, it really has helped me to kind of keep the SATCOM part of my work sharp. And also initially was a really good, just kind of regular client, let's say, where I was able to do pretty regular work with Euroconsult for some of their end customers. So, I mean, I would highly recommend anyone listening to dig a little bit more into Euroconsult, because they're a pretty outstanding company. But yeah, that did come quite a few years after I got to Hong Kong.
Okay. And what about Orbital Gateway Consulting? How did that come about?
Yes, so that came about at the end of 2017, beginning of 2018. So I had started my MBA in Hong Kong, which was a part-time degree program. And I had started to see the Chinese space sector, especially the Chinese commercial space sector, really start to grow. And my work with NSR was, again, primarily global SATCOM work. And the satellite communications market in China is essentially, especially at the time, it was pretty boring. It was a monopoly pretty much, with China Satcom having, you know, the entire market. And so really, when looking at my Satcom work, there was very little scope to look at China. And so I decided at the end of 2017, beginning of 2018, I'm doing my part-time MBA program. That gives me some kind of, you know, justification. It gives me something that I'm doing, where if I quit my job and just don't have any income for 6 months or a year, at least I'm doing this degree. That gives me some level of you know, let's say it gives me something to do. And so I decided to leave NSR and to start my own company, Orbital Gateway Consulting, primarily focused on the Chinese space sector. And so, again, that the first 6 to 8 months of China was pretty much me typically paying out of pocket to go to Chinese space conferences in kind of random second and third tier cities in China, trying to meet people, trying to kind of learn what's going on in the Chinese space sector, and not really seeing a whole lot of revenue from that, because it was basically just, you know, I was just some guy going to these conferences and kind of trying to understand. But yeah, so that was, ultimately it was okay. I mean, it ended up Orbital Gateway Consulting has been a pretty good opportunity up to this point. And so it's been good, but yeah, at the beginning it was fun. There were a couple of times where I was just, you know, at some conference in, you know, Harbin or Wuhan or so, and just thinking to myself, like, what exactly am I doing here again? Because I don't really have any clients here and I don't really know anyone. And I don't, at the time I didn't speak Chinese very well. And so, you know, it was, Harbin is pretty damn cool though. It's an interesting place. There's, you know, a lot of history there. So, yeah.
Sure. So that's amazing. You went to a lot of conferences to learn about the Chinese space sector, and China has been very busy when it comes to the space sector in the past years. But what is going on in the Chinese space sector? Because, like, we have limited knowledge here. I've been working as a journalist for the past 2 years, and there are some Chinese websites that I would need to get info from, and I can't even access the websites from here. So we rely on you and people like you to tell us what's going on there. So what's going on there? Fill us in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no kidding about the websites. There's one, Tiananmen, which is a kind of a company registry kind of a website, and it used to be available all over the world, and now it's like really, really, really shut down. Like, you can only access it inside of China, even if you have a VPN, even if you jump in circles. I mean, it is a not accessible website anymore from outside of China. So I feel your pain about the difficulty of getting information sometimes out of from behind the Great Firewall. Getting back to your question of, you know, what is going on in China in the space sector, I would say, just to take a short detour, I mean, over the last 9 years, so basically since the end of 2014, we've seen this fairly large scale growth in commercial space companies in China. So we now have probably, depending on how you define commercial space, between 150 and, you know, many hundreds of commercial space companies. And this ranges from, you know, companies building large rockets themselves, all the way to, you know, companies that are building laser optical, laser inter-satellite link terminals, this type of thing. So I mean, really the gamut of you know, large systems level stuff to very specific kind of single component or single subsystems type of things. And again, this has all really happened over the last 9 years. So before 2014, basically the entire Chinese space sector was state-owned enterprises or the Chinese Academy of Sciences or other, you know, purely state-run entities. And now we do have these, you know, 150 to, you know, several hundred commercial companies. Now these commercial companies, they have kind of different shades of commercial. I mean, some of them are commercial, like purely in name only. So for example, X-Space, which is a launch company, they are a wholly owned subsidiary, I think is a fair description, of CASIC, which is a large state-owned military and aerospace contractor. So, you know, the word commercial in that context basically just means, I suppose, that their primary or one of their primary mandates is to make money or to not lose money or to basically be a little bit more commercially minded than their parent company, which is, you know, also not a cash incinerator per se, but which is not really commercially minded necessarily, is Kasich. And then you have, you know, commercial companies on the other side of the spectrum that are a little bit more, let's say, commercial in the Western sense of the word, which is to say, you know, a handful of researchers or a handful of scientists that may have had an idea and went and started the company, and the shares are primarily owned by these individuals, and they're developing some technology, and then they hope to sell it to the state or to other commercial companies. So you have this ecosystem that's developed over the last 9 years of these commercial companies, and it's starting to mature now, I would say, in the sense that you're starting to see. I mean, we saw a couple of weeks ago launch company Space Pioneer. They launched their Tianlong 2 rocket, which I always get this wrong, but I'm fairly certain they were the first company to have a successful launch of a liquid fueled rocket in their first attempt.
Wow.
Is the designation. So you have these different companies that are really starting to mature now. You know, it takes a long time to develop a rocket, and here we are 9 years later, and here we are. So again, that's kind of the big trend that we talk about a lot in China, is this commercialization, and that's a trend. The other thing I would point to that's, you know, happening in the Chinese space sector, as it were, is that the state is expanding pretty quickly. I mean, we've seen the number of launches by CASC, the main sort of state-owned space contractor. They've gone from the order of magnitude, say 25 launches maybe 8 years ago, to about 50 or 55 or probably 60 launches this year from CASC. So quite a lot of expansion there. And those launches have primarily been supporting things like, you know, the Beidou satellite navigation constellation, which was launched from the third generation was launched mostly from 2018 to 2020. A lot of Yaogan remote sensing satellites, Gaofen also remote sensing satellites. Of course, the Chinese space station, a lot of space exploration missions. You have a lot of these big projects that are being done by the state. And occasionally now you're starting to see commercial companies playing a very limited role in some of these very big projects. But they are still, you know, primarily run by the state. I suppose, as would be the case in the West, let's say. So yeah, I would say that those are kind of the two main trends. And I guess the kind of overarching theme there is the Chinese space sector, whether it's commercial or state owned, has been growing fairly rapidly over the last, you know, 9 or 10 years. And in the case of the state owned space sector, it's been growing for even longer than that. But quite a lot of activity going on in China.
Yeah, definitely. Right. So I just want to ask you a few questions about the relationship between the US and China, because that's an interesting relationship at the moment. So obviously the US warned about China being the first on the moon, for example, and then not letting anyone else use the resources there. And, you know, is that just fear-mongering, do you think, or is there something to it?
So admittedly, I don't really know enough about, let's say, lunar exploration, or let's say, I don't know, lunar exploitation, dare I use that phrase, to really know whether, you know, could China stop others from accessing the moon, or could China get there first and create difficulties for the US to land on the moon. But I suspect that for things like that, like for space exploration, for these, the fears are probably a little bit overblown. I think those fears are probably a little bit overblown. That being said, I do think that the US-China situation in space is becoming quite a lot more complicated now, and there are some, I think, justified fears and justified, say, skepticism on both sides. I think, you know, some of what we've seen published in the last couple of months with regard to, like, the Chinese military and their posture towards Starlink, or the Chinese government and their posture towards Starlink, these are obviously quite concerning. There was an interesting article in the FT at the beginning of March that was talking about the F, I think it was the FT, it might have been Reuters, and it might have been neither of those two, but I'm fairly certain it was one of those two. But it was an article that had they had done some research into research papers that had been published by China on, you know, military-ish research papers on the topics of things like Starlink and so on. And I mean, yeah, it really does seem like there's an intense desire by the Chinese side to develop capabilities that could, at a minimum, clearly stop Starlink from, let's say, accessing China, but potentially even, you know, let's say, more aggressive tactics like trying to disable Starlink. It's, I mean, obviously it's speculation, and these articles were all a little bit opaque, but I think that some of those issues are real, and that they're going to become bigger issues. And I think more generally, it's really concerning, because when we look at, you know, the US and China, if we think about 5 years from now, I mean, they're both going to have thousands of satellites in orbit. I mean, China right now already has, I don't know how many satellites they have in orbit right now, but they've launched almost 800 in the last 9 years. A lot of them have since presumably come to end of life. But of that 800, I would think probably 400 or 500 are still in orbit. And again, that number is only going to increase. And so, and you know, again, US is the other big player, you know, European Union, these are all the big players. And if there's not coordination, and if there's not communication between these players, obviously space is going to get crowded and, you know, rather hazardous very quickly. And so those are also, you know, those are concerning things as we get into this period of like rapid acceleration in launching stuff into orbit. So I think overall, if I'm being entirely honest, I am less optimistic now about US China than I was, say, a year ago. But I still, you know, I see that there are some dialogues, that there is, you know, some openness by people on both sides. And so, you know, I'm very, 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 very cautiously optimistic sometimes, let's say, even if I'm mostly pessimistic most of the time. So hopefully that's not too, let's say, caveated of an answer. But yeah, that's kind of where things are from my perspective on that.
Yeah, I get that. One positive thing for me was that when they launched, I think it was the last module of the space station, they were more transparent about where the rocket was and where it was going to land. Well, land, not land, but crash into the atmosphere and then into the ocean. So that was a positive thing for me. But then again, we hear about the cooperation between Russia and China. And I just don't know if China alone should be concerning enough, or should we look at the Russia-China relationship in a little bit more detail? You know, is that something that's really going to just kick the whole thing off because China has the funds and Russia maybe has the technical knowledge, or they both have both? I don't know. So I imagine that cooperation will just make them stronger, and they tend not to like the US.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and at the risk of kind of playing an armchair geopolitical analyst, maybe we could say, I mean, I look at the China-Russia relationship in space, and I mean, more broadly, I think it's, I suspect, especially from a Chinese perspective, because, well, I guess, I suspect that having a friend that is such a large country geographically, that shares such a large border with China, and that also has certain, let's say, strategic, what's the phrase? They have certain things that you know, that China needs, and China has certain things that Russia needs, as you alluded to earlier. Yeah. I think that's particularly important to China, especially when we consider the neighborhood that China lives in. So if we compare China and the US, you know, the US has two countries that directly border it, I, as far as I know, with, you know, Canada and Mexico. And like, those are two pretty, you know, staunch allies of the US. They're, neither of them are particularly threatening to the U.S. from a strategic perspective. And then, you know, the U.S. has access to both oceans on or, you know, two of the four oceans, let's say, on both sides. And if we compare that with China, you know, China is bordering, I don't, it's something like 12 countries. And of those 12 countries, you know, you have countries like, you know, India, with whom China has a border dispute. You have countries like Pakistan. You have, you know, various Southeast Asian countries that, you know, at least one of whom, Vietnam, China has gone to war with in the last 50 years, should be the last 50 years, maybe 55 years. So basically, you know, China's in a pretty rough neighborhood, and therefore they are rightly a little bit paranoid about their geopolitical place in the region, let's say. And then they also, oh, and North Korea, they're also bordering North Korea. And so to then imagine that their big northern neighbor Russia is becoming a closer and closer friend, and also their big northern neighbor Russia is in a weaker and weaker position globally and relative to China in this relationship, I think it's going to make China, you know, probably a harder bargainer at the bargaining table with Russia, but it's also going to make them more willing to deepen the collaboration, because it's good geopolitical business sense, if I can use such a phrase. I mean, it's kind of, yeah. So I think from that perspective, the China-Russia relationship is probably going to continue to, let's say, to deepen over the next, you know, however long. And I think, to your point, there are, man, it's late here. I'm drawing a blank on this word that I there's some not counterbalances, but it's complementarities. There are some complementarities between China and Russia as it relates to, again, natural resources, human resources, technology, etc. And so I think from that perspective, it's going to be an important relationship to watch evolve moving forward, for sure.
So my perhaps last question is about the future of the space sector. So you're there, you can see what's happening there. How do you see China's future in the space sector?
So I think domestically, we're going to see, I mean, the commercial companies seem to be continuing, they're going to keep growing and playing a bigger part in the sector. I think when we look at the state-owned companies, so CASC mostly, but then also CASIC and others, I mean, they have so many very big projects that they're doing right now that, and the space industry is growing in China rather quickly, that they just don't have enough manpower, enough bandwidth to take all of these projects. And so up to now, we've started to see these commercial companies filling these gaps and doing some smaller elements of some of these projects. And I think that's a trend that's going to continue. I think there's going to be, however, this kind of tension between, you know, trying to be really innovative or do like really difficult things, and also having an industry that's, you know, very much dominated by the state. So one example is the sort of, let's say, Chinese response to Starlink. So, you know, what is China's low Earth orbit broadband constellation project going to look like? And 2 years ago, China created this state-owned enterprise, China Satellite Networks Limited, which is essentially going to be the operating company for the Chinese version of Starlink. And granted, they've been pretty under wraps. They've been pretty quiet up until now. And it's possible that they're doing a ton of stuff under the radar that we just don't know about. But we haven't really seen anything. I mean, they haven't launched any. They've launched maybe a handful of satellites, but none that are directly attributable to China Satellite Networks Limited. Like their headquarters building, which is being built in the new kind of capital district in the south from Beijing, you know, that as of the end of last year, it was not it was sort of somewhat advanced stage of completion, but like not really, like let's say 65% done. And I think part of the reason is that when you look at the leadership of this China Satellite Networks Limited, it's a bunch of like 65-year-old Han Chinese male engineers that come from careers in state-owned companies. Like they're not gonna move fast or break things or do innovative stuff. And they're not incentivized to do that. I mean, the system in which they've spent their entire careers has been this kind of top-down, hierarchical, risk-averse, you know, state-owned system. And so you're starting to see commercial companies playing a somewhat bigger role, but they really can't play that big of a role because the state still controls this this part of the sector. And so I think you have these kind of, maybe not contradictions, but again, these things that are going to create some friction and create some challenges. And that's going to be something that they're going to have to address. And I mean, we've seen a little bit of what China would call reform and opening up in the space sector, and it makes it a little bit easier for commercial players to do things. But again, like it's going to be a challenge to address that. And then let's say a second angle is, I think that the space sector in China is going to go more international. And I think it's going to be, you know, primarily in the developing world. So the newsletter that you mentioned at the beginning of this this interview, the most recent article I wrote there, it talks about China's new strategy for going international in the space sector. And I think, and it talks about these two satellites they've recently launched for Egypt, and these satellites were launched and built as part of a broader package deal whereby China built a satellite assembly integration and testing, or AIT center, in Egypt, in this sort of new capital city that they're building, I think to the east of Cairo, although it might not be east. But basically you have I think you're going to see China exporting more space stuff, and in a different way than they've done before. And that's kind of a long story that I will point your listeners to the newsletter if they want to read more about it, because there is a long article written about that exact topic. But I think that in general, we're going to see more international cooperation with China, primarily looking at the developing world. I mean, the other example, we saw just about a week ago, China invited Venezuela to join the International Lunar Research Station. Now, granted, I don't want to offend any Venezuelans, but I would consider Venezuela kind of a second tier space power, let's say, at best. And so I don't know to what extent that's a hugely significant move for either China or you know, say the broader global space sector. But I think it's indicative of the way that China is looking at international cooperation. I think that they see a lot of countries that are trying to get more involved in space that might have, you know, some previous links to China, even in the space sector. So like Venezuela, for example, they bought a satellite previously from China. And I think we're going to see more of that. And it's going to be more tied into things like economic development or kind of, you know, industrial base build out, et cetera. And so that's definitely going to be something to look for as well.
Right. Well, thank you for that. That's very exciting. And yeah, I encourage our listeners to subscribe to the newsletter you just mentioned, the China Space Monitor. How do you see your future? Are you going to be dedicated to China and the Chinese space sector for the coming years? Or is there something else you want to do within the sector?
Yeah, no, I think I'll be covering the Chinese space sector for the foreseeable future, at least as part of my work. I mean, it's a really exciting time now, and you know, and I was there for the kind of the less exciting, somewhat boring time back in, like, let's say the 2018-ish timeframe. And so, yeah, having put that time in, yeah, I'm going to I'll be covering it for a while, although we'll have to see from where in the world I'm doing that. But that's another discussion for another day. But either way, yeah, I will certainly be looking at the Chinese space sector for a while.
Okay, well, we thank you for covering that and giving us information that we can't get anywhere from anywhere else. And thank you for talking to us. We wish you all the best.
Well, thank you as well. No, it was fun, and yeah, hope to come back again sometime. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Can we catch you at any conferences coming up?
So I will be at the Asia Tech X Singapore conference in June. I think that's the next conference that I'll be attending. And then maybe not until October, I'll be at a conference in Malaysia, the APSCC conference, Asia Pacific Satellite Communications Council. And I guess also Euroconsult in September. I'll be in Paris most probably. So a few, but not for a couple months.
Right. Okay. Well, hope to see you soon. And until then, we'll just subscribe to your newsletter. Thank you for speaking to us.
Cool. Thanks a lot for inviting me.